Not,
hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. And, you know, we are here at the Abbott's 75th annual get-together, and this is going to be just a wonderful time because there's so much going on. And I didn't get a chance to do kind of a pre-show to let you guys hear my preparation, but in kind of a way that you are, because here tonight over at a special kind of a night-before party over at David Seabock's place, and tomorrow we have our colon open. Let me rephrase that. There's going to be a golf tournament tomorrow, so which is open tournament. It's going to be some fun. Hopefully I'll have some interviews from there. But right now, I have Adele Friel-Rendress. Rendress or Rindress?
Rindress.
Yes. Who you may have heard. We had interviewed her last year when we were at the MAS, and we were talking about the book, and you have been giving a few lectures on this. Is that right?
So, yeah.
And so you're here. You're going to be doing an interview then on tomorrow morning. I'm sorry. Thursday?
I'm actually a speaker at the 75th anniversary for Abbott's get-together on Friday at 1 o'clock.
Friday at 1, okay.
That's for Abbott's. And tomorrow morning, I'm going to be interviewed by the American Museum of Magic.
Marshall Museum, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're bringing in a committee of three people, I believe, to interview me.
Wow.
And so this is really exciting. I have not been to their museum yet, but I want to get there before I leave the colon.
Now, is it going to be a video interview?
I believe it is.
That's good.
It's going to be for a certain project. It's called Magic in Michigan.
Yeah.
And because I was with Blackstone Senior in the 1940s, they contacted me and asked me if I would be videotaped for this project that they're doing.
Now, this is exciting for me and hopefully for listeners out there then as well, that as I understand, was this Blackstone Island? Or this was kind of the area where he would camp for the summer? Tell me something about this.
No, he lived here. This was his home. This was Blackstone Senior.
You say home? Was it this house? I mean, it was
no, not this house.
This area. Okay,
no,
this area.
There's another house.
Okay.
It was his property. And I believe it's been cut up into other, it's been sold off. But in the original one was 208 acres.
Wow.
And he also grew mint for Wrigley's gum.
And
really? I'm not kidding. And it just smelled wonderful after rainstorms and things. I have a lot of good memories because I lived in his house right in the Blackstone home in 1948, the summer. And that's when he created the elusive moth.
Yeah.
Or the moth in the spider's web.
Which was what you were in.
And I'm the only one who did that. And I had a special costume made. And Walter Gibson and his wife, Lise Litzka, who's also a magician, and she was the wife of the great Raymond.
Yeah.
But he passed away, and she married Walter. And they were both there, and they brought her rooster, John a boy. And the rooster didn't have a place to stay except my bedroom closet, and that's where the rooster was.
Okay.
In 1948. They were there for a couple of weeks. But Walter,
so each morning you would get up with the crack of dawn.
We didn't need an alarm clock. And Walter Gibson is the one who drove Blackstone and me to Chicago to get measured for my moth costume, which Blackstone designed.
Yeah.
And so we went there.
Now, he came and developed these tricks. I mean, he came back like he would go out and on tour, and then he'd come back, and then he would repaint and rebuild and come up with new ideas each year.
Oh, yes. He had the most magnificent red barn that had all the props and all the illusions and everything all of them would be repainted and set up and cleaned, and sometimes we'd have new illusions or new tricks that we worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his brother Pete Bouton built a stage in the Red Barn so that we could have rehearsals for the moth and the spider web, the elusive moth it was called.
Now, how difficult was that at the beginning when you first started trying to learn some of the moves and to get into this? And
I was a dancer when I joined his show.
Yes.
He knew that, so he was using my skills.
I had
all I did was create some dance steps and twirls.
Did you create a lot of the choreography yourself?
I did it myself.
Yeah.
But most of it was to drum beats because it was a jungle scene.
Jungle scene, right?
And the spider web was in the jungle scene, and the natives chased me around
with spears. Yeah.
Yeah, and they caught me and put me in a spider web, rolled me up.
Yeah.
And and rolled me up, and I was taken to almost about 20 feet up above the stage.
Yes.
With Blackstone, saved the day. He came in and he did a majestical, magical move and a puff of smoke, and I disappeared.
Now, how many times a week would you do this?
Our schedules were always 10 shows a week or more.
Mm-hmm.
We did 7 nights and Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday matinees.
Okay.
And then when we had shows like that, we had to get to the next town. We traveled by train overnight.
How much did a ticket cost back then?
Right. I think it was like $1.25, $2.50 for the reserve seat, something like that.
Interesting. Now, you said that you would go by train and travel overnight. Now, was there an advance team that would be setting up everything, or did the whole...
The whole troop went together.
Everybody went together?
Yes, we had our own group that would set up and help, and the assistants themselves did all... The men, the boys on the show, the assistants, set up most of the illusions, and everything was brought from the train. We went into trucks, and I met the animals, and everything had to be transferred by truck to the theater, and everything came off, all the illusions. The crates were painted orange, but they were in order where they could be placed at the proper spot for each theater in a specific area so that we could find them quickly, and everything would run smoothly, and it was easy to back up and get the trucks and back to the train again when we were finished.
How long would that take to set up and tear down? An hour, two, three, five, six, how long?
I guess sometimes we spent a whole morning, depending, because all the curtains had to be hung, everything had to be hung.
Right.
And the lighting, and up in the rafters, and we had certain young guys would go up there and make sure everything was secure. I can't give you an exact time. It just depended on the stage.
But did the train wait for you then? I mean, you had your own private car?
No,
or
we
what?
Got different trains all the time.
Okay.
It wasn't the same train.
Okay.
But he booked it, and so it was a...
So you never ever missed a train?
No, we never missed a train.
Yeah.
Some of the stages, Blackstone and Pete would go in. I'm calling him Blackstone. I never called him Harry. I always called him Mr. B or Mr. Blackstone, or I refer to him as Harry Blackstone.
Just out of respect, or?
I never did call him that because Harry is junior.
It's junior to you, okay.
Yeah, to
sure.
me, if I talk about Harry, it's junior.
Funny, okay.
So, he would have everything planned ahead. But he would go on stage, and I would hear them say, "Oh, Thurston was here. Oh, Houdini worked this. He could tell." And if there were lots of little
traps,
yes, with the traps.
Yeah.
And sometimes he would have to cut the traps. That took longer to prepare.
Yeah.
Some places we went, some auditoriums or theaters did not have the facilities where we could do the levitation. It took a long time to set that up. And the buzz saws, everything had to be in tip-top shape, but we couldn't do every single illusion at every single place. But we did 10 shows a week, definitely, travel or not.
Wow, and so that was how many cities, do you recall?
The last tour we did, I think... I think it was 46 cities.
Mostly the Midwest?
No.
East or...
With us, we went to Canada and New England and down into Atlanta and that area, out to Oklahoma and Iowa and Minnesota, some of the Midwest and some into Kentucky and Tennessee.
So pretty far and wide.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was on a tour with him from October 6, 1947 to April 1st, 1950. And so during that time, we never got out to the West Coast because that's the way the tour went. But some theaters we played, for the 3 seasons I was with them, we played the same theater 3 times. Like the Nixon Theater in Pittsburgh, we were there 3 times.
Okay.
Or another theater in another city. It just depended on where we were. But
who was it that worked booking all of the theaters? Did Pete do that, or did Harry Blackstone himself do that? Or
no, there was an advance man. His name was George Alabama, Florida. I kid you not.
That was his real name, George Alabama, Florida.
It was, yes.
Okay.
And he reminded me of Dick Tracy because he always wore that hat, and he always knew the answers. He knew.
But he would be the guy who would be the agent, essentially, who would negotiate with the theaters.
He was our advance man.
And he would give you your itinerary, so here's where you're going.
Yes, yes. He would talk it over. He would have to check the stage. He would have to check a hotel or something like that, and the restaurants, and he would have that on the bulletin board at the theaters a couple days before we would move on to the next thing. And we would look, the cast would look on the bulletin board at the stage door,
yeah,
where we get the mail and everything. And sometimes we would have to take roommates because it would be too expensive to be in a hotel by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of times I spend time in the YMCA on my
YWCA.
YMCA sometimes,
okay.
Too. And but I remember very clearly, and I don't remember who my roommate was, but we talked it over. See, sometimes we did private if it was low enough.
Yeah.
Rent. The hotel bill was $11 a week.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel bill was $11 a week.
A week? Okay.
A week. And we looked for something, and we found it. It was $9 a week. And
that
we
wasn't
got
cheap
it.
Enough. $11
this was in the 1940s.
Okay,
you know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
this is a decade after the Depression. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was right after World War II. And we always had, I think, I was told that when I was on the show during that time, it was the peak show. Everything was very well. Because we had sold out performances way before we came into town. Sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the banner shows. And it was absolutely wonderful.
And you couldn't do another show because you had to catch a train to go, you had an obligation for another city, I guess. So you couldn't be held over?
No, I don't know. It was set up.
Yeah.
It was set up that we had a certain time for travel and certain time for
right.
the city.
So you couldn't really extend your shows
no,
for another week or something.
We didn't do that.
Hmm.
Well, we were booked, we did it, and that was it. But I think our last tour, we had like 246 shows that we did
right.
on the last tour, which was from like early September of 1949 to April 1st, 1950. That was the end. That actually was the last show where Blackstone did a 2.5 hour show. After that, it went to an hour or something.
He was having some lung problems, some breathing problems. Is that
oh,
right?
Yes,
yeah.
He had asthma. Yes,
yeah.
And that's... That canceled some performances on the first two seasons I was with him. And Blackstone never had an understudy while we were there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he did, the show would have gone on.
Mm-hmm.
The show closed if he was too ill to perform.
Okay, what would happen in a case like that? Did they give people their money back for their tickets? Or?
I'm guessing they did.
Okay.
I'm guessing they did.
Hmm.
But
now, did you train some of the other dancers?
There were no other dancers.
Oh, you were basically it. Now, when he talked about his, what was it, cast of mostly 50, mostly gorgeous girls?
Girls,
yes.
Yeah.
So you were the one dancer, and the rest were...
Well, they were all assistants, and they were good. I didn't train anybody. But I got trained when I first went there and was interviewed, because the very day I was interviewed, I had to run out and get some stage makeup before the grease paint, because it's a little different from a nightclubs where I used to work. I used to work in nightclubs when I was 16, 17. I was 17 when I joined a show.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to.
And your parents weren't really wild about that, as I
remember.
Yeah, so your parents weren't wild about that, I think, when I was reading your book.
It was okay because we were poor.
Okay.
And that was a way of making money. I got $75 a week. My father was a sergeant of police at the Philadelphia Naval Base with a wife and four children,
yeah.
And he made $75 a week. I didn't need all that money. I wasn't going anywhere. Blackstone paid for the travel. I paid for my hotel and my food.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to buy anything. I used what I had. And I sent $50 a week home for every week that I was on that show. to help my family. I was the oldest of four children.
So that's why you were looking for a cheaper hotel instead of paying $11 out of your own pocket.
Yeah, because why should we pay $11 when we could get it for $9?
Yeah, and it was out of your pocket, so it made a big difference.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, did you ever have situations in which that something didn't arrive or something got lost or you had to improvise as far as with your makeup or your dresses?
Oh, no, everything went on in the crates together. Everything just left this. Whenever anything came into the theater, it was all together. We also had our jobs to do.
Yeah.
Millie Bouton, Pete's wife, was the wardrobe mistress. Mm-hmm. And so she was in charge of the girls and everything. And we had our own jobs to do. And we had to have the music had to be out for the organist that traveled with us. And sometimes when we got into cities, if we were there for a week or so, we would have the organ would be augmented with some musicians and musical instruments to make it a bold sound for our show. And they, in the town, some towns. But we had to set up for our own makeup. We had to set up our clothes and open up the... We had so many changes so quickly.
Costume changes?
Yes, in the show, that we could not go to our own dressing rooms to get dressed. We had our clothes, our wardrobe, trunks for the costumes, one on each side, in the east wing and the west wing. And the east wing, not the east wing, the west wing. Right stage and left stage, actually. And but one was east and one was west. and that we changed right on stage, practically on stage.
Was there some place that was more of a memory that you like to go? I mean, when you would go back to the city, say, I really like this place, or I like their shopping, or I like the weather, or I like the stage, or was there something about one of the places that you like better than others?
Would you believe New Orleans?
Oh, sure I would. I love New Orleans.
And we went there, and did you ever hear of Ward Hall?
Ward Hall.
Ward Hall, he is the king of the sideshow.
Yeah.
And I met him a couple years ago at the Magic History Conference in L.A. A few years ago. And when he found out, we performed at the Poche Theater in New Orleans, and he found out that I was on stage and he was in the audience.
Oh.
He was a guest star at the conference, and he wanted me in all his pictures. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. But when I was in New Orleans, I had a habit of getting, I was sort of a loner. I went around and I would go. I lived at Basin and Canal Street, and I'll never forget it. I would walk out the door and get on a bus, and it might cost me 25 cents for an entire route of the bus. I would do this almost every city I had a chance. I would get on a bus and go a tour, see what the city has.
Yeah.
We went through the Latin Quarter, the French Quarter, down in New
Orleans. Garden District and everything,
and all the botanical gardens,
right.
And I even got off and rode a bike through a botanical garden down there. And then I got back on the bus and went. But and I never went out with any stage door Johnnies. Do you know what they are?
I'm guessing those guys hang out backstage all the time waiting for the
gorgeous
girls to come out.
Yeah, they want to take the girls out.
Yeah.
Well, I promised Pete Bouton that I would never go out with a stage door Johnny because I was a teenager. He said, you don't know who's there and who's going to take anyway. So I never did.
Sure.
But anyway.
And I guess you promised your dad, or Pete maybe promised your dad, did he take care of you or what?
No, he didn't. He just an automatic thing. He just watched out for me.
Okay.
But I went out with five guys in one night.
This is a good story. Okay.
This is really true.
Okay.
But they were all together. They were stagehands at the Poche Theater. And they asked Pete, could I go with them to a shrimp out or whatever they could, the bayou where the shrimp comes in.
Sure.
They cooked the shrimp and put it on a table and newspaper. And we
Oh, yeah.
And we were... We were eating shrimp, and it was taste so good. And they promised they would get me back to the hotel so I'd be safe and sound and come back to the show the next day. And we had a great time. And I, when I got back to the hotel, I was so stinking from shrimp that I took my shoes off and got in the shower and took a shower with all my clothes on, get rid of this shrimp.
From the smell of the shrimp on your clothing.
I loved when I was in Texas and talking at the Houston
TOM.
There were some fellas there from New Orleans, and they were so happy I said that. They came after I was finished and invited me to go back to New Orleans and have a shrimp out. Yeah, it was great. I love New Orleans.
I think the food there is tremendous, and they're such friendly people, and it's just a very vibrant city. There's so much going on over there all the time. Now, you said that to me early before we started this podcast, the recording, you had said that you had not been back here to Colon since 1949?
Well, that was my last year that I was here working in the Red Barn. We had a Red Barn, and we did all the props and everything.
Yeah.
I joined the show in 47, but in the summer of 48, when they were creating the Elusive Moth, I was asked to come out to Colon early, and I didn't know that I was going to live in the Blackstone home, which I did for the summer, and it was magnificent. It was just a wonderful thing. But see, I didn't know how good he was at that time. I didn't know that he was like.
He was just an employer to you,
I guess. He was my boss. Yeah. And he called himself the horse thief, and he called himself the boss.
Yeah.
So this is what
the horse
I
thief. Wait, why did he call himself the horse thief?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. But I have a letter with signed the horse thief. So.
That's funny.
Walter Gibson took me to the Abbott's Magic Shop because at that time Blackstone and Percy Abbott were not getting along well. And so Walter took me to the Magic Shop. Yesterday was the first day I had been in that Magic Shop, the Abbott's Magic Shop, since 1948. I didn't get there in 49. We were so busy with other things on the island, Blackstone Island, that I didn't have time to go anyplace
else. It's not like it's a huge city. I mean, it's only a mile away, but
even
so.
I didn't get out.
Yeah.
You know, we were busy.
Because they fixed all your meals there, I'm sure.
Pardon me?
I said they fixed all of your meals, I guess, there.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was Sally Banks, who was the housekeeper for Blackstone. Mm-hmm. And she cooked all the meals, and she had a cowbell outside of the door. And when she'd ring the cowbell, we'd all go for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And Blackstone was with us, and we all sat together. Harry Jr. was there sometimes, too, when he was out in school.
Right.
So we were all together, and it was delightful. But Colon, I haven't been back here. This is my first time at the Abbott's get-together.
Why do you think it's taken so long to get back here? I mean, it seems like since you'd lived here, it's almost like a second home, I think.
After I left the show on April 1st, 1950, I didn't contact anybody. I'm very sorry. I didn't because...
Within magic at all.
Del Rey was on the show with me, and I heard later that he was just a magnificent performer.
Right.
World known.
Right, because he worked with you at Blackstone Show backstage.
He was an assistant just like I was. His name was Dell. My nickname was Dell.
Like
there were
Del,
two
sure,
Dells.
Okay. And, you both turned your heads around
We figured it out, but he was really a great guy, and I saw him perform, but never in his own act.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw him perform when we were traveling from city to city, and he would be in the lobbies of hotels or whatever, and he would just be practicing. He'd have a crowd around him.
Right.
Because
I always heard that Del Rey and Harry Blackstone both loved magicians. They loved whenever they were in cities, they go out and perform and just kind of hang out with other guys. I mean, you know.
What they did, they had different approaches to magic, but their main deal was to entertain. And Blackstone would go every single night after a show to a magic club, in the local magic club.
Yeah.
And he became very popular. Oh, he was popular. He was the world's greatest, and I didn't even know it at that time. he was my boss.
Yeah.
And Del Rey was invited to go out and perform.
And Blackstone really respected Del's
card. They respected both. Each one respected the other.
Mm-hmm.
But they had different approaches.
Sure.
But Blackstone would take him along.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a special girl that went with him when I was on the show.
Yeah.
And she was a sweetheart. She was my roommate many, many times, Betty Stolle. Mm-hmm. And she passed away, and she would love to have married him. She just loved. She was really in love with Harry Blackstone. Mm-hmm. But he didn't marry her. But she never married, and she passed away. So.
What was Blackstone's wife's name?
Pardon me?
What was Harry Blackstone's wife's name?
He had three of them.
Okay. Which one did you know? The door opens when you were living
in the... I didn't know any. Well, I met the last one. Her name was Betsy Ross.
Okay, I remember that.
Elizabeth Ross. Yeah. I only met her briefly, but the other two were Inez Kitchen,
yes.
Inez Borse or something like that, and the other one was Billy Matthews, and she was Junior's mother.
Yeah. Okay.
Billy Matthews was Junior. I did not know them then. This was in the 1930s.
So you only know the third one?
I briefly met her.
But she didn't live here at the in the Red Barn? Or
I don't know. I don't know. I don't
summer.
Know what she did. I don't know where they lived. I think they...
No, what I'm saying, when you were living in the Blackstone house, that she was not living there with him.
She wasn't married to him at that time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I understand.
She didn't marry him until 1950.
Uh-huh.
I think I had just left the show.
Okay.
Right.
So he was single then.
He was single.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why your friend was hoping that she would pop the question.
She was sincerely in love with him.
Yeah. Interesting.
So,
well, I know you got just a lot of wonderful stories also that you've shared in your book. Tell us the name of the book and where they can buy that.
The book is called Memoirs of an Elusive Moth,
Absolutely.
Disappearing Nightly with Harry Blackstone and his show of 1001 Wonders. How's that for a title?
Yeah, the abbreviated title is the same thing.
Yeah, the Elusive Moth.
Okay.
Memoirs of an Elusive Moth.
Right?
They can put... buy it from Gabe Ferrari at Squash Publishing. They can get it on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have bought it from me directly.
And if they want to do that, can they contact you through a website? Or?
Yes, I have a website, and it's elusivemont.com. Or my email address at arindres@aol.com.
That's arhindres.
Yes.
So they can contact you directly and order that.
Yes.
Sales have been pretty good.
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no.
Particularly when you've been going out and talking about it, I'm sure.
Yeah, sometimes it's pretty good that way.
Yeah.
So Gabe is going to bring some books. Yeah. He'll be in the dealer's room here.
Yeah.
And so.
It's a delightful read. I certainly recommend it. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people. I think that I think you'll have fun with this book.
Yeah.
So
it's a fairly fast read. I mean, they can sit down and read it. You know, and it's, a lot of interesting stories and everything. You know, for someone who's been there and done that.
Thank you.
I
don't tell the tricks. I only tell what I do in the tricks.
Yes.
I don't tell what the magician does, but they can figure it out.
Well, it's true. Yeah, I should point out for those who might think that they're going to find the secret. These are not blueprints. These aren't behind the scenes of how things work and the trap doors you went into or whatever.
Yeah.
It's,
mm-hmm.
it's just the stories about how that you came to know and
work
with.
It's all true.
Yeah.
It's all true.
Yeah. Very good. Adele, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you for your time. And so for now, that's Adele, and this is Scotty out. Hold on just a minute.
And I signed a lot of stuff. It's
like all right, I almost forgot one last thing, and that is, since this podcast is called The Magic Word, I know that you've heard a lot of magic words over the years, and as you've gotten back into magic and talked to a lot of other magicians. Now, this may not be like a word like abracadabra or hocus pocus or something, but it could be something you live by or something that means something to you. You know, what would be your magic word or phrase?
It's something that I sign on pictures, and I sign when I sign my book, and it's signs when I sign in emails. It's magic.
It's magic.
It's magic.
Because it is.
Exclamation point. It's magic. That's my sign off.
That's very good. And I think that's a good way to sign off here. So for now, Scotty out. All right, well, we're still over here at David Seabock's party and having to corner both David and got Greg Wardner. Hey, guys.
Hello.
And so that let me just say that this is the 75th, and you're excited, and what? So you're going to be glad when it's over?
Yes. Oh, yes. But it's a challenge, and
yes.
we've certainly gone out of our way to do a greatest show as we can possibly do this year.
The greatest show on earth.
Well, not quite that, but we're close. It'll be close.
What's going to make it great this year?
Well, we had David Seabock on, and
there
we
go.
Michael.
I'm looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, Michael Finney, Graham Putnam is going to do a dealer pitch, and we have Matt King from Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, yep.
And the Long Beach Mystics, you know, Tina Leonard and Arden James. Oh, I almost guarantee a standing ovation. I don't want to jinx them, but they're mime act together there where they do a little dance.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, they'll pop up.
What night is
seats.
That?
I believe that's Friday night.
All right.
Oh, actually, Saturday night when they'll do the dance together. Yeah, Tina's on Friday night, and she's great.
I just saw her on the EMC, the Essential
right.
Magic Conference. She was doing a completely different act than her usual
maid.
Cleaning woman
cleaning
act.
Lady.
That's right.
Yes, yes. And she's going to lecture this year. I saw her lecture out at...
very interesting lecture.
Yes.
Very connecting the dots. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How her whole life went into her act.
Right.
You know, it really does make you see what it takes to be successful in show business. You have to really devote your life. And
now, you were telling me before when we were doing this for Magic Magazine about the interesting people who were going to be coming who used to work here. David,
yes.
Did you work? Let me stand over here. Get over here, then, as you as well. You did not work at...
I've never been employed here, no.
Just to perform, but
well,
not
but
as...
Not a guy who worked in the shop or a demonstrator like
cuts
so many
woods
others.
And stuff, everything like that. Yeah, right. Okay, exactly. So if you're going to be doing a big illusion show then here, I assume, as well, this year, or what?
We're doing one big stage illusion and one big stage feature. I don't know whether you would call it an illusion, but...
Okay.
And a few other things that I'm kind of somewhat known for.
Now you've done
that have been popular.
I heard your lecture many years ago, and are you going to be lecturing again this year?
No, I did that a couple of years ago here.
Okay.
But,
was it that long? Was it?
No, time flies.
Boy, I guess it does. Okay, it seems like it was longer than that.
Two years ago that I lectured here, I think.
Yeah.
Two or three. Yeah.
That's good. And so again, the other challenges you were saying, so that you've had some other difficulties, or
oh well, there's
the usual. Thing.
The usual. There's a lot of construction at the school this year.
So or the elementary school. Explain
well,
that.
At both.
Well, at the elementary. Oh, yeah, we haven't had a show at the high school yet. The the parking is all completely different. We're going to be off in a little different area. It's a little rougher field, so getting around is going to be rough for some of the older people. So we have a drop-off place if they're at all handicapped, and then they're going to have to drive the car out a distance for some of the people. Next year it'll be open, and last year it was open, but it will be different this year for the parking and so forth.
The plan was to have the Cullen Valet Parkers come in for the old people, which were 15-year-old driver education students,
and try to park the car to jam them in.
That was not the plan. No. But like Tim Wright used to work as a demonstrator. He was working in the wood shop, and they.
Yep. And he's here.
Yes. He'll be here. He's on the way. Night show. Tom Mullica.
Yeah.
Right? He used to work in the wood shop, and he took the class, the Chavez class from Neil, and he'll be on then the Wednesday night show as well. So it's kind of like a recurring theme for the Wednesday night show. B.J. Mallon is my demonstrator at this time. He's a young kid of 30.
Yeah.
And he'll be on the show. He puts the nail up his nose and does fire eating.
All the really cool geek stuff. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's young.
Yeah. He doesn't know different.
He'll learn. But it is exciting-looking stuff.
Now, what about registrations? You know, I know that this is the 75th, so you really kind of pulled out the stops, I'm sure. And that so how's it doing this year?
Oh, great. We were sure that if we put on a dynamite lineup with some really known talent, then this being the 75th, that truly is a magic number.
Yeah.
You know, last year it was the 74th, and that just doesn't have that hook.
Ring.
To bring them in, you know. As in next year for the 76th, what are you going to do?
Well, bring in trombones.
Well, there you go. We'll worry about that next year, but that's a good idea. Yeah. Maybe we will.
Yeah.
The opening act.
Yeah, there you go. Have them all.
Maybe a trombone.
High school band coming in with playing 76 trombones.
Right? There you go. Well, or seven or six. In Colon, we don't have any. Yeah. We don't even have high school band.
Well, that's the population, isn't it?
I think pretty much. So, yes, we're going to get through this year first.
Yeah.
We're going to take them one step at a time and make sure everything goes well right now.
Yeah.
And then we'll start concentrating
next year.
Yes.
After this is all over.
That's right.
I already have your eye on the ball this time.
Right. I have a number of people who wanted to be on this year, and they were worthy, but they didn't have quite that name recognition, and so we'll have them on next year.
Yeah, yeah.
I've already got like half the.
Well, you've answered part of my question in your mind. Yes.
Because
he's pointing to his head, by the way.
Those are
spinning. And so that you've got a lot of people who are planned this year, and then for next year. So you've answered one of my questions. You anticipated a question I was going to ask about the continuation. There have been some other conventions who have said, this is our last year, you know, we really can't do anymore, or we're not, for whatever reason, you know, Magi Fest and others, you know.
We're still having fun.
Yeah.
And we are making money.
Good.
The goal really
Those
is to have fun.
Two key things in
yes,
that order, yeah.
If you're not having fun, then
why do it?
Why do it? I think that's what
if
happened.
It's a job.
Yes. The Magi Fest was a lot of volunteers, and they had gotten a lot older.
Sure.
And they didn't look like they were having fun this year.
Now, are you having new guys coming in who are helping that you're kind of creating excitement amongst people who, or is this all just kind of your love that you're still doing?
Oh, yeah, it's my life.
Well, I know.
I mean, Tina Leonard gives a lecture about how show business is her life. Well, really, that's mine too.
Sure.
You know, I'm not on stage. I don't want to be on stage, but, you know, it's really all I think about is making sure that the get together is a success.
Right.
You know, and if you're going to be alive, you want to be a success.
Right.
You know, you should work towards those goals. And next year is going to be a great show, I'm sure, but we got to do this year first. Take them one step at a time.
But you're not grooming anybody, per se, to kind of take your place?
No,
would you say?
Not yet. No, okay. It's, you know, I've got a new heart. And,
I know. It's still going pretty good.
Yeah. And so my life expectancy has been extended, and I'm in no hurry to sell, you know, as long as we're making money at this thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of a challenge going into work every day. But, it's fun. Still, there's more fun.
But one foot in front of the other every day.
That's right. A reason to get out of bed.
Yeah. Now, David, you've been doing, I know, a Halloween show in Milwaukee, kind of changing gears here for just a minute. How many years have you been doing that?
This will be number 23.
Wow. Now, see, you got another 50 or two to go, you know, and so you catch up with with the 75th that he's doing this year.
Well, I was doing the math. It was 40 years ago right now that I performed at Greg's get-together for the first time.
For your first time.
So I was at the 35th get-together, and I know I was at the 50th as a performer. I've come to almost all of them.
Yeah.
Well, not all 75, of course.
You're looking great.
This is the 10th time I'm on stage here, plus the time I lectured. So I'm kind of a familiar old face here.
And you reside here now.
Just for a week.
Yeah.
But
tell me about the show. We're talking about the Halloween show. So
okay.
They moved the venues recently.
Yes. The theater we were in, it finally became untenable. It was not being properly maintained. And the last year we were there, which I believe was our 19th year, it was raining opening night. And it was raining in the theater as well as outside the theater.
Okay.
And that was one of the last straws. The theater was broken into twice during our run, so there was props and costumes and stuff stolen of ours, and it became too much to try to...
Not a great neighborhood, I guess.
It was not a great neighborhood. It was a wonderful old theater, and it looked the part.
And you did it for how many nights a week? Or how many...
It's just 2 weekends.
Just 2 weekends.
So it's 8 shows over 6 days on 2 weekends. Pretty traditional schedule now. The interior of the theater was great. If Disney wanted a haunted theater, this is what he'd build. But he'd have to truck the dirt in.
We
had
it.
We had it. The plaster was crumbling. It was built in the late 1920s. It was a very ornate theater when they spent lots of money on decor and everything was fancy. And all of that was decrepit. And so the suggestion that it was haunted was a very easy suggestion to make.
It's a short leap.
Right. Now we're in a theater that has a bigger stage, has better lighting, better sound, dressing rooms on the same level. They're not underwater. It's in a very safe neighborhood.
Very sterile.
There's lots of free parking, but it's brand new.
Yeah.
And it's clean. And it doesn't have the ambiance, so it's a little harder to suggest that this building is full of ghosts.
Yeah, Bill Gates is still alive, so you can't say he died or something.
No, no, no.
His ghost was there or something.
We do the best we can. You know, every time you make a change, it's always a trade-off.
Sure.
You'll gain something, you'll lose something, whatever it is. You just got to keep going. The only constant in life is change.
And you got people obviously come back year after year after year, you know, and it's been a tradition for many years. How would people find out about tickets, and if they happen to be in the Milwaukee, which I have been to your show, and I highly recommend it if anybody gets a chance.
www.illusionsinthenight.com. Spell all of that out. One word, and you can order your tickets right off the internet there, and they're all reserved seats. So, yeah.
Awesome show. Well, anyhow, I'm going to talk with you, Greg, after this whole convention is over to kind of get a recap, hopefully, from you that you can say, okay, well, we tried this. This was going to be different, and this worked great, or this didn't work. This worked, or I'm going to tweak this next time, or whatever. So, kind of get a recap.
Okay.
Is that fair enough?
Oh, sure. And it's at.
Well, I'm sorry, but whenever I was trying to record the end of that conversation with David Seebach and with Greg Bordner, apparently my microphone became disconnected, so I missed the last part that got to hear my chat with Greg Bordner. So we'll pick up again with him after the convention is over to kind of catch a recap. I know you'll enjoy it. Thanks a lot. Scotty out.